Good evening, and welcome to Waterworld Radio, celebrating diversity and loving it. This is Nevin Campanella bringing you a radio talk show that has no limits and bows to no one. From this microphone, we bring you guests who will lead you across those shadowy plains of forbidden knowledge. And tonight's radio adventures are going to come from two very, very wonderful people. One, Yazos, musician, composer. I'm telling you, folks, this man's music is angelic. And that will be followed up by Lloyd Orbach. That'll be during our second show. Lloyd is a master psychic and, get this, folks, stage illusionist. He has brought them both together. Now, before we get started into the show, we've got a few things to do. First of all, one announcement. Starting in February, probably around February 19th, I think. I don't have my calendar right in front of me. We are going to have Gordon Banta, a psychic who will make regular appearances on the show. Gordon comes from, originally, I think, New Jersey, my old stomping ground. I know he also spent a lot of time in Florida, and now he's living in Massachusetts. But he will join us sometime in February, where we will take call-ins. Gordon will probably do global events, and on the call-ins, he will with some personal issues. However, before we go anywhere else in all this entertainment, let's check in with Charlotte King. Charlotte, how are you doing?
Hi, Nevin. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful tonight. What have you got for us?
Well, this week's been not as busy as some of the weeks, quake-wise. We did have a relatively good-sized quake in the Congo. They had a 6.8 on the 5th of this month. And then Mexico area was having some activity that's always preceded by sharp needle-type heart pain. And then Hawaii continues to really shake since the lava shelf broke off and they're having the waterfall of lava there in Hawaii. The Kermadex had a 6.4, which is the left rib area of the body. And I felt at that time there would be a larger event because the ribs didn't get any better. And in fact, today they had, depending upon which company you're reading from USGS or from the Tsunami Alert Center or whatever, either a 6.8 or a 7.0 quake in Papua New Guinea, in New Britain, Papua New Guinea, actually, today. And that would be pretty much in what I was feeling at that time. There's been a lot of chest pressure reported by people, including some really bad headaches with this, and that's always Turkey. And, in fact, Turkey did have a 5.2 this week. Again, Eastern New Guinea, Papua New Guinea, had a 6.1 as well this week. So the New Guinea area is really shaking. There is a volcano in that area that is has not erupted for a while, but they're very concerned about it erupting. And they're keeping an eye on that because of all the activity that's been going on. They are more concerned at that point. There was a beaching whales and dolphins in Brewster, Massachusetts on the 11th. And unfortunately, they died because the people that are brought in to help them out on the strandings couldn't reach them because of the weather. And so they said, well, it could be they could have been trapped in shallow water. They could have been caught in tidal fluctuations. They could have been ill, etc. All the things that they told me when the whales beached here in Oregon in 1979, which turned out to be quake-related. Now, in the past, every time pilot whales, there were 9 pilot whales and 24 dolphins, and every time pilot whales have died in the past in the East Coast, we followed with earthquakes in the Bay Area of California. And not large quakes, just, you know, shakers. And so I'm watching that area now, which would be temple-to-temple headache, achy chest pain, and intense sleepiness if it's around the areas of San Jose, Morgan Hill, or Santa Cruz. And the Sierras are quite active, a lot of stomach pain, in the area for that region. That would be Coso Junction, Tom's Place, Mammoth, Bishop, Ridgecrest, Mono, that whole area. Then St. Helens has been having a lot of activity, had another little ash plume this week, and that's back ahead, left side, and achy heart sometimes, and it can, in fact, cause stomach pain as well as disorientation. There's been a lot of shaking in Alaska the last few weeks, especially the last week, and nothing really big, but just lots and lots of shaking in the 4s and even 5 range all over the area. And that's really about all I have.
Charlotte, I have a question for you.
You bet.
Are you familiar with what they're calling ocean taking place in somewhere in Africa, a hole in the ground opening up?
I saw something about it on one of the news websites. I really didn't get in and read it totally, so I really can't comment on it. It's interesting concept. I mean, what they're talking about is interesting. I would like to read more about it and see what I can find out about it, and I will be happy to report that next week.
Oh, yeah, I really would appreciate that, Charlotte, if you could give us some information. I'm totally amazed by what they're saying, and maybe you can do some follow-up on that. Also, folks, in February, Charlotte's time will be shifting out of this first hour and into the second hour, and we are going to expand her time on the radio. So I'm looking forward to lots of changes taking place. And as our guest had mentioned to us before going on the air tonight, it's all about change, folks. Well, thank you so much, Charlotte, and we will be with you again next week.
I have one other quick thing, if I may.
Go ahead.
There was a report on the CNN last night I was listening to, and they were saying that within 50 years, they expect the aurora borealis, or the northern lights, to leave the North Pole and actually be in Siberia.
Yes, I read about that myself.
And I thought that was really fascinating. And they said they really didn't know why. And I thought, well, because maybe one reason is because of the tilt that took place a year ago this month when we had the major tsunami.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
The Earth changed its axis a little bit, and that would be enough to do that. But I thought that was fascinating.
Oh, yeah, really. Who knows where the aurora borealis is going to show up? Maybe in my own backyard. Well,
okay.
Thank you so much, Charlotte.
You bet. And thank you for having me, and I look forward to speaking to you next week.
Good night to you.
Good night.
Well, folks, that was the report from Charlotte King. And when Charlotte returns in February in the second hour, besides the earthquake alert report that she usually gives with relating to body symptoms, she is also going to expand the report to include all earth changes that have taken place or that she's predicting that's going to take place during the coming week. And that will also include solar flare activity. Well, here it is, December 11th. What happened on this date, December 11th in history? Well, in 1860, Indiana became the 19th U.S. state. I don't know much about Indiana. I drove through it a couple of times, and I will describe it for you in detail. Very flat. That's about all I can describe. 1941, December 11th. Come on, folks, you know that one. Germany and Italy declared war on December 11th, 1941, declared war on the United States. Now, an awful lot of that news I wasn't around for, but the next one I was, and this happened in 1981. The Salvadorian Armed Forces massacred on December 11th in 1981, 900 villagers. It was in the mid to late 80s that I became involved with El Salvador, and because of my career as a psychologist, I wound up having to make a couple of trips down there, primarily to do some evaluations on adoption services. It was a very benign, low-key kind of thing that I was involved in, and yet I got tracked all the way around El Salvador both times while I was there by the CIA. Who was born on December 11th? Folks, if you don't know this name, then you're not doing your homework. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Russian writer. Now, I'm not going to tell you I read everything that he wrote, but I did read The Gulag Archipelago, and I did read all three volumes. Basically, it's about his personal experiences in the Soviet prison camp. If you get a chance, do read it. Who was born on December 11th? One of my most very, very favorite actresses, Terry Garr, born in 1949. Who could possibly forget her fantastic role in Young Frankenstein and Close Encounters of the Third Kind? She did a lot more work than that, folks, but she really, really is a great actress. What's in the news tonight? Well, I'm sure everybody is aware about the major explosion that took place about 30 miles or so from London. Apparently 20 gasoline, huge tanks holding about 3 million gallons of fuel erupted. They blew up. The police were quick to insist the blast appeared to be an accident, and all reports about any plane flying around the area have been squashed by the police. All I can say to that, folks, is that from what I read on the blogs, people are saying there was a low-flying plane. However, the authorities say no such thing. Who knows? You know, there's no doubt that our world is in turmoil, and while some people focus on the negative, some remain balanced and provide hope for the rest of us. And tonight's guest, Bezos, is a person of hope, and he provides that hope via his music. He is one of the founders of New Age Music. His musical creations have been described as of celestial origin. In 1967, to his surprise, he began to spontaneously hearing a new type of music. Have him discuss that with us. Now, I've got a little footnote here, folks. We may or may not be able to actually hear the music. That's my fault. The producer tells me that he might be able to pick up the clips, and if we can get together on this, I might give him a cue. The guest and I will have to go off the air when it's played, but that's okay. We'll kind of come on and off. We're all troopers here. This is live radio. Hi, Yazos. Welcome to What a World Radio.
Hi there, Nevin. Happy to be on your show.
Oh, I've really been looking forward to talking to you. You know, you've got so much on your website, and I have been through it. You know, when I first encountered you on the net, I thought, okay, here's a great musician. But then I come to find out you've got some pretty heavy things going on in the whole metaphysical area. You've done a lot of writing.
Well, that's a big part of who I am. And for me, metaphysics and music are inseparable. They all go together. It's just inseparable for me.
That's what I want to find out about tonight. So, just get the ball rolling a little bit. I'd like to hear about your background. The audience would like to know where you're from, and your name is unusual in terms of the English language.
You might want to talk about
that a little bit. Yeah, I know it's Greek. I'm Italian.
Poor neighbor.
Yeah. But the audience would like to hear a little bit about your background. So why don't you start off and tell us, how did you come about?
Okay. I was born in Greece in 1947. And when I was 4 years old, my family moved to America. And we lived in New York City for a few years and then upstate New York. And then I went to college at Cornell University studying everything except music. I was trying different things, but I realized that all my creativity was in music, so I decided to finish college and then go to California to work on music. And along the way, I started hearing some very unusual kind of music in my mind. It's sort of like listening to music with headphones, but without headphones, and it was unlike anything else that I've ever heard. And I thought, God, if I could create this, I bet a lot of people would like it. I don't think everybody would like it, but I bet a lot of people would like it. And I didn't know what to call it because it wasn't jazz, it wasn't classical, it was just different. I called it paradise music. Now they call it New Age music. And so I started working on it, but I thought, you know, when I first was hearing it, I was hearing not only unusual music, but unusual musical instruments. I was hearing sounds that didn't exist out here. And this was before synthesizers existed. And I thought, God, I'd love to create this, but I don't have a clue how to do it. And some voice inside my head said, you can do this. So I trusted that voice. And then a few years later, I had a very profound metaphysical experience where in a flash, a lot of stuff was downloaded. And I woke up to remembering a lot of stuff. Basically, I woke up and realized that before I was born, I'd made an agreement with this higher dimensional light being. And he and I made an agreement that I'd incarnate here on Earth, and his part would be to transmit music ideas to me. And my part would be to receive that, manifest it, and get it out there where everybody could hear it. And the whole point of this music was to facilitate helping people go through the vibrational upshift that our planet is now going through. And that facilitated our telepathic connection. So even though I'd already been hearing music in my mind, now I realized who it was coming from. And that just made us have a better connection.
When you get that connection, well, first of all, is this something that continues today? I mean, do you still have that kind of channel open?
Yes, although the last 2 years it's been focusing more on visuals and music because I've been working on creating a DVD of my latest music album. And since nobody was doing the kind of celestial visuals I wanted to see, I figured I'll just learn video effects and do it myself. So I've been studying video, and this being, after all, his name is Vista. That gives you an idea. He's even more into visuals than into music. So I've been getting a lot of ideas in that realm lately.
Well, absolutely fascinating. You're the first person I've spoken to a few people who have channeled, but I have never spoken to anyone who's actually channeled music.
You know, it's funny. When I first started my career, the name of my company was Interdimensional Music, and a lot of people hearing that, oh, what a hype, interdimensional music. Then when they heard this, they said, gee, it really is interdimensional.
Yeah. I have listened to your music. I played the samples that you have on your website, and folks, it's absolutely marvelous music. Well, you kind of pretty quickly the experience of, you know, going to college. What were you originally majoring in?
Well, see, I didn't know what I wanted to do. I started off in physics, then pre-med, then psychology, then sociology, and then I started hearing all this music and realized that I wanted to be doing music, but I was very careful to not study music because I knew I was hearing really unusual music, and I didn't want to be programmed by their idea of what music is supposed to be because I knew I was hearing some very unusual ideas of what music could be. So I avoided studying music, even though the music professor at Cornell has gotten great reports about me as a musician for my high school music teacher. So he's always phoning me up trying to get me in the college band, but I just avoided it.
Well, you have such a fascinating background. Was there any special reason why the immigration took place from Greece to the United States?
Yes, my father was a doctor in the Greek army, and he fell in love with America because he ended up in a German concentration camp, Auschwitz, and just when he was almost dead, basically just a little skin on top of bones, the Americans came and rescued him, and that made him fall in love with America. So after the war, he figured, let's move to America. He thought Greece was very corrupt. Let's move to America. So that's why we came.
Oh, absolutely fascinating. Now, that there's nothing in the on the website that alludes to that.
Well, the website's about my music, basically.
Yeah, but people also want to know about the man behind the music. It's very
well, that's
important.
Why we're doing this interview.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You got me.
Yeah.
Well, how about, did he share with you at all any of his experiences?
Yes, he did. They were so horrible that I would not even want to share it with you. It was just...
Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
It was just too horrible. It was surrealistic. I wouldn't wish that on anyone, even to hear it.
In terms of your music, getting CDs, which I had an opportunity to do, and I failed at doing, dummy me. yeah, I should have taken you up on it.
Yeah.
But at the time that I was originally contacted you, I was knee deep into schedules, and
no problem.
I didn't know which end was up.
But you know, since you don't have my music to play, why don't we at least tell them where they can hear it on the internet?
That's a good idea. Why don't you describe that for him?
Okay, well, my website is yassos.com, and my name is spelled I like Indiana, A-S-O-S. So that's yassos.com. And then if you put a slash and then put audio clip, but without an I in the clip, so it's A-U-D-I-O and then C-L-P, audio clip, and that'll get you to the page where you can hear the music, and it's in real audio, it's in MP3, and it's in Windows Media format. Take your choice.
Yes, it's and it's very easy to use, folks. I've done it, and I'm terrible on the computer. Well, let's make a start into some of the concepts behind the music. There's a few things that you've talked about in some articles you've written, and I really would like to get into that.
Be my guest. Take your pick.
Okay. The one that really intrigues me is you have an article called The Differences Between Angels, Humans, and Elementals.
Yes.
How about opening that up for conversation? And
okay, first of all, that doesn't really have much to do with music, but we can still go there if you like. Still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, basically, I'm just sharing my understanding of three different kingdoms that all work together that are designed synergistically to help and benefit each other, the human kingdom, the angelic kingdom, and the elemental kingdom, which basically means nature spirits, elves, dwarfs, fairies, undines, mermaids, etc. And each of these kingdoms goes to higher and higher levels of evolutions all the way up to infinity, so there's no one kingdom that's any higher than any others. They basically have parallel growth. And so you can be as high as you like in any kingdom. For example, you can in the angelic kingdom, you have these tiny little baby angels, and eventually they decide to focus and dedicate their life to a particular type of service. So then they get better at serving, and then eventually they become a big angel, and eventually archangel. And then there are higher levels than that, Maha archangel, which means great archangel, etc. And it just keeps going up. And then in the elemental kingdom, you can have these tiny little things smaller than an electron that are real and have a self-consciousness, and then eventually evolve to higher beings. They might end up eventually being an elemental that's in charge of maybe creating a tiny little flower, okay? When they get really good at it, then they graduate to a higher position. They might have a big flower bush. Then they get really good at that, they might graduate to being in charge of a whole forest. And then when they get really good at that, after many, many years, they might graduate to being in charge of a whole valley, and then a continent, and then a planet, and then a solar system, and then a galaxy. It just keeps going up. And likewise, we humans are embryonic gods and goddesses. There can be solar gods for solar systems and galaxies. We're all just evolving, and we're here helping each other because they serve each other in ways that benefit each other. For example, elementals work with humans, they're called builders of form, and their job is to receive thought forms or ideas from humans and then to materialize or manifest them, which is why you can tell your plant, I'd like you to grow this way. For example, I've got a fern plant in my porch, and I told it, forget about being a fern, I want you to be a wild jungle vine and grow all over here, just grow wild. And it did it, you know, it did it. We love each other. And I had that same fern before in a previous house where it was on an edge coming down over a painting that I had in my living room. And that plant, or the devas in charge of the plant, were so intelligent that when it grew in front of the painting, it didn't grow any leaves there. But when it went past the painting down below it, it grew leaves again. It's as if somebody clipped it, but nobody clipped it. The elemental did that on its own. So the job of the elementals, they're called builders of form, is to materialize things from the etheric plane to the physical plane. And then the job of the angels is to administer to the emotional needs and the spiritual needs of both humans and elementals. For example, if there's a big forest that all gets cut down for lumber, then all the elementals there that were in charge of those trees go through quite a state of shock. So angels help them out because they're in such a state of shock because their trees were cut down, and they make them feel better. They nurture them, they soothe them, and eventually they reassign them to a new tree that they can start working on. And likewise, angels, as you know, help humans in many ways, protective ways, inspiring ways, soothing ways, just in a nutshell.
Yeah, my wife bought her daughter a keychain, and on it there's a little saying, and it says, don't drive any faster than your guardian angel can fly.
Nah.
Which I thought really got to the point. You mentioned the job of the angels and the elementals. what is our job as humans? To screw it all up, or do we have a real function?
Oh, yeah. We're interdimensional transformers. Our idea is to receive ideas from celestial heavenly planes and to materialize them here on Earth to make Earth a heaven as it is in heaven, you know, just to turn it into a heaven, to receive divine ideas. And a lot of people are doing it. Of course, the news focuses on the negative, so you don't hear about it. But a lot of people are doing it in many ways. As our planet is getting more intense in its vibrations, the negative are getting more negative, the positive are getting more positive. But you only hear on CNN, et cetera, only the negative stuff, because if somebody in Iowa opens up their heart to infinite unconditional love, CNN doesn't report it. But if they murder the neighbor, it reports it. So it's a very biased announcing of the news. However, a lot of wonderful things are happening that way.
Yeah, only 10% of the population make 100% of the news. I'm sure of that.
I bet it's even less than 10%.
Yeah, probably.
Probably more
so.
Like 3%.
If the we're both aware that humans have a dark side and a light side. Does that hold true also for angels and elementals?
Well, what you just said about a dark side and a bright side, I wouldn't call that an absolute truth. I'd call that just one way of viewing it. Another way of viewing it is that we're all growing and waking up, and eventually, when we get even more awake, we choose that which benefits all life, because eventually we realize that we are all life. And that's why the golden rule is treat other people the way you'd like them to treat you, because in reality, they are you. You know, when people die, they get this big flashback of how they treated everybody else in that last lifetime, which means whenever you hurt anybody else, you get to experience the way they felt. But it also means whenever you are wonderful and loving to someone, you get to experience that too. So the golden rule is basically a reflective mirror based on the fact that we really are the one same person. You know, God's breath is flowing through all of us. Angels don't have the level of free will that humans have. Free will is a dangerous thing because you can get out of alignment with a divine will when you have free will. And we here on Earth are so out of touch with our own divinity, if I can just generalize, not everybody, but you know, a lot of people are, that allows for the possibility of being mean and cruel to others, like hurting others for your own personal benefit. That comes from a level of profound separation, not realizing your connectedness to all life, not realizing your connectedness to divinity, and therefore you're feeling so powerless that the only way you feel that you can survive or succeed is by making success and benefit at the expense of others. But eventually you realize those others are you, so you're trying to help everyone. So it's just a temporary phase till they wake up and grow up on it.
Well, you certainly have a very structured view of the
don't we all though?
Okay, what I want to ask you though is, where do you get your information from? Is that also from a channel?
I've been avidly studying metaphysics since about 1964, because I've been profoundly, profoundly wanting to understand how does reality really, really, really work. So I've been studying a lot of different religions. I've been studying science, but truthfully, I don't trust religions. I don't trust science. I want to know what's really going on. Forget what religion says. Forget what science says. What's really, really, really going on? And since the mind is actually a magnet that pulls towards it ideas related to whatever it focuses its attention on, for example, golfer might get ideas about how to become a better golfer. And since my attention has been focused for many years on how does the whole thing work, I've been attracting information from many sources that helps fill in that burning question within me. And funnily enough, curiously enough, the most profound information I've come across in my own humble point of view is from an off-planet civilization that's not even on this dimension. It's in a totally different timeline, and it's basically an ET race. And for me, what they're teaching is so profound that it makes everything else I've learned seem really, you know, kindergarten by comparison. It's like light years ahead of everything else I've learned. I even have it on my website. It's Bashar and Elam.
Okay, I saw the Bashar, and we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
You're picking this up from a person who's channeling Bashar, correct?
Yes, just like I channel Vista, Daryl Anka channels Bashar, and Andrew channels Elan.
Okay,
both
now,
Bashar and Elan are beings from that civilization.
Since you have done so much study, I have a burning question to ask you.
Please do.
Is there a single composer of existence itself? The Godhead. Is there such a thing?
Well, rather than single, I'd say on a one level, we're all composers. For example, Vista, the being that I work with, is considered, he's in charge of the music of the spheres for the sect of the galaxy that we're in. So he's a pretty high up being, but there's no top. You know, it's an infinite ladder. It just keeps going up. No matter how high you get, there's always an infinite number of people less evolved than you and an infinite number of people more evolved than you. So you're always humbled because you always know that there are more that know, others know a lot more than you do. So you just help those that know less than you, and you were helped by those that know more than you. So there's not any one composer. No, it just goes all the way up to infinity.
You mentioned five hot tips for tuning into angels. What do you got for us?
Well, one of them is you need to ask.
That's it?
Well, the thing is, they honor your free will, okay? They honor your free will, and so you have to honor that, you know? You can't, they won't let you get around that. If you want, they can only do so much on their own without you asking, because free will is a divine gift and they're not going to mess with it. You know, if you want their assistance, they can give a certain amount, but if you want a lot of assistance, then you just have to ask them, okay? So that's called you ask them or you invite them or you invoke them. And by the way, there's a certain cosmic protocol. If there's a particular being you want to work with, doesn't matter if it's Mother Mary or Saint Germain or Jesus or Buddha or Mohammed, there's a certain cosmic protocol, which is you ask their name three times in a row. Why three times? For this reason. They need to distinguish between if you're just thinking about them, if you're just talking about them, or if you actually really want to communicate with them. So if you call them their name three times in a row, they know, well, he's not just thinking about me or talking about me. He actually really wants to communicate with me. So whoever your favorite divine being is, if you really want to have a communication with them, call on them three times in a row. You can do it out loud. You can do it silently. It's all the same to them. So number one is ask them, invite, invoke. Invoke means I'm requesting you to interact with me. I'm requesting you to have an influence on me, okay? And then the second tip for tuning into angels is stillness. Get yourself emotionally still so you can get clear reception of what they say, because very often you ask them for something, they send an answer, you don't hear it, so you think they didn't do anything, no one's there. But that's because you didn't hear it. And there's an analogy for this, which is, let's say that you're standing in water that's, let's say, waist deep or knee deep, okay? Let's say you're standing in knee deep water and you're trying to look at the rocks that are on the surface on the bottom of the water, okay? If the water is very, very still, you can easily see every single rock on the bottom. If there's a lot of commotion on top, there's a lot of wild waves, then it all gets distorted. You can't see the rocks on the bottom. Well, the water corresponds to your emotional body. If you can get your emotions really, really still, then it's easier to get clear reception, to receive guidance from your angels, also from your higher self, also from your guides, also, you know, any being that wants to communicate to you. So getting yourself very, very still is extremely important. Basically, it boils down to this. The stiller you can get emotionally, the more clearly you can inwardly receive information, thoughts being transmitted to you from anyone, okay?
How do you achieve that, though? I mean, that's very hard for me to do.
You know, I have an album called Timeless Sound, and that whole album is dedicated just towards helping people achieve emotional stillness. There are angels, by the way, the angels of stillness, whose job is just that. When they radiate their energy on people, it helps them get very emotionally still and calm. And that's their job, and that's all they do. Go wherever they're sent, where they have permission to influence people, and they radiate this energy. It gets people very, very still. I experienced them once, and I was practically levitating from it. It's quite something. So, you know, if you want to get still, get Timeless Sound, or at least listen to it off of my website.
Yes,
and then the third of the five tips is heart sensing. That means don't try to listen with your mind. Don't try to listen with your thoughts. Don't try to listen with your logic. Listen with your intuition, which I call heart sensing. Okay? And then the fourth tip is you can bribe the angels. you can bribe them. You can get them really excited about helping you. And basically it boils down to this. They evolve when people send them love and gratitude. Their auras get bigger. The big game for them is, let's see how much I can evolve. Let's see how big I can make my aura. Because for them, their level of evolution is proportional to how large their auras are. So they're always proud and like to get their auras as big as they can. It's a big deal for them. They love doing it. And they're always impressed by other angels that have even bigger auras than they do. So they love getting love and gratitude. It's like payment for them. For for example, for us, you know, if someone gives you $300, says, wow, thank you, that's wonderful, I appreciate it. Well, likewise, if you give angels love and gratitude, they get, wow, thank you, I appreciate it, especially since they very seldom get that from humans. So
you're giving information that I have never heard before.
I work with angels all the time in my music. I can tell you funny stories about them even. So if you pay them in advance, they'll be more enthusiastic about working with you and interacting with you and giving you whatever you're asking for. And then the last one is, if you want to have angels really interact with you, get your own aura and your own home as harmonious as you possibly can. And I can explain by an analogy. Have you ever gone into a strange new home and you walk in and you think, ooh, these are icky vibes, I don't want to be here, I want to leave right away. And you
go to
another home, you go to another home and say, oh, wow, these are beautiful vibes, I want to stay here. Well, angels experience that when they come near humans. Most humans have an energy that for them is pretty not harmonious, just to be a polite way of saying it. But sometimes they have to do things certain places, so they will, but they'll split as fast as they can, otherwise they get emotionally exhausted from it. But if you want them to hang out in your space, the more harmonious you can make your own personal energy, and the more sweet, loving, harmonious, fragrant, beautiful music, beautiful lights, beautiful fragrances you can make your home, the more they'll want to hang out, because they'll use your home as an oasis amidst all the clutter and junk of planet Earth. They'll want to hang out there. It'll become a hangout for them. So make your space as harmonious as you can. So those five tips are, number one, you have to ask for them. Number two, get yourself emotionally still so you can really receive. Number three, intuitively sense them, not through your mind, but through your feelings, heart sensor. Number four, pay them in advance by sending them love and gratitude. And the fifth one, make your own personal energy field in your home as harmonious as possible so they'll want to hang out with you.
What about feng shui? Does that help with...
Yes. That makes the energy flow through your house more harmonious. The more harmonious it is, the better. Anything that makes it more harmonious is a good deal.
I have a slightly off-topic question for you.
Great, shoot.
Over the past few weeks, I keep seeing bursts. Don't think I'm crazy, please. I keep seeing bursts of light inside my trailer. They come in colors of orange or blue or white. And at first I thought, well, something is wrong with my eyes. But
are they pretty lights?
Yes, they are very pretty.
Yeah, well, you're seeing interdimensional beings, most likely fairies. Possibly angels, most likely elemental beings like fairies playing around and liking hanging out in your space. Congratulations. Make friends with them.
So they're okay. You know, I how do you make friends with an elemental? what do I say? Hi, welcome here. Sit down and join us for dinner or what?
Number one, acknowledge that you sense that they're there. Make them aware, because they can easily notice us, but they're used to humans not noticing them at all. So for you to just say, hey, I really get that you're there, that itself is a treat for them. Because through the ages, they've served mankind, they've gotten very little thank you for man. You know, if you work for your boss and he never says, thanks, you're doing a good job, you know, you don't feel like working for him. But if he says, hey, you're doing a great job, you're motivated to serve that person more. So just send them gratitude. Tell them, I sense that you're there. Thank you for being there. I sense that you're there. I'm glad you're hanging out with me. Come hang out with me more. They sense that, and it makes them really excited. They jump up and down like little kids. They get so excited.
Are these elementals connected to any of our myths and lore, like elves and that kind of thing?
All that's real. Every culture has their own version of many Huni in Hawaii. You know, they all have them. And their tendency is to dress. The tendency is to copy humans, so they'll dress according to the way the humans dress in any particular area. So in big cities, you may see a little fairies dressed punk, like punk rockers, because their tendency is to imitate humans.
Why do I see them as lights? Why can't I see, you know, something that resembles a form of some sort?
Well, what you're really seeing is you're seeing an interdimensional spill-off of their energy. When they have a big explosion of excitement, a certain amount of that slips through dimensions, because they're just slightly higher dimension than where we are. And so a certain amount of that energy, if they have an explosion in their dimension, a certain amount of that spills off into this dimension. Just like if there's an atomic blast on this dimension, it affects neighboring dimensions, they don't like it, which is now why they have permission to prevent any big major nuclear bomb from going off on this planet, because it'll interfere with the neighboring dimensions. So it's a spill-off between dimensions. But if you really want to see them, there is something you can do, which is this. You know, for two things to be able to perceive each other, they need to be vibrating on the same frequency or have the same frequency in common, just like your radio listeners can hear you because their radio is vibrating the same frequency that your radio transmitter is transmitting at. And by having the same frequency in common, they perceive it. Well, flowers are made by fairies. And if you want to be able to perceive fairies, eat, drink flower essences. And if you do that on a regular basis, then their energies start becoming part of your energy field. And when their energies become part of your energy field, that means, guess what? You have the same frequencies in common. When that happens, it becomes easier for you to sense them.
Well, it's at first when, years ago, I would see a flash here and there, I pretty much ignore it. But lately, it's just been so much, it's hard to ignore anymore.
Well, that's because you are raising your frequencies. The higher your visual cortex is vibrating, the more of that you'll see. Eventually, your visual cortex will be vibrating such high frequencies that you'll see their actual form.
I can hardly wait. On to the next. You talk about beauty. Where are you going with that?
Well, beauty is what I'm all about. For example, when I started working on this DVD project, which is to create visuals to go with the music for my Realms of Light album. My professional video friends asked me, well, what's the structure of the DVD? What's the message? What's the plot? What's the structure? I said, there's no message whatsoever. There's no plot. There's no storyline. It's just concentrated beauty patterns. Just nothing but beauty patterns. That's all. Just beauty, but no plot, no message, no build up to this or build up to that. It's just beauty patterns. Basically, it works like this. Beauty is emotionally uplifting. Beauty is spiritually inspiring. Beauty is both physically relaxing and also physically healing. Beauty causes the heart to open up because it reminds you of divinity. Beauty causes one to feel love. Beauty is healing because beauty is love. And the way that works is universal love is a cause and beauty is the result of that. Then beauty becomes the cause and healing is the result. So it's universal love which causes beauty which causes healing. And beauty is one of the highest manifestations of infinite divinity or God or all that is, whatever you want to call it. And it's also one of the most beautiful and satisfying ways to work yourself back up the spiritual ladder back to God. So my whole life is just dedicated and giving people concentrated blasts of beauty patterns, both in music and now in visuals. And by the way, on my website, they can see glimpses of a DVD I've been working on. You know, I've got a page for video clips they can go to, and they can, watch streaming video just to see what I'm cooking up. And it's really a lot of fun.
One of the things that you mentioned and is back to infinite divinity. Since you said back to an infinite divinity, that implies that at one time we were there.
Yeah, basically, it boils down to this. Each of us actually is an infinite, eternal, all-knowing, all-seeing being, okay? We exist in all dimensions. We've always been here. We always will be here. We are infinite. We know everything, okay? But there are certain disadvantages to being in that state, which is there's no sense of surprise, there's no sense of discovery, no sense of exploration, because you will know everything now. And so, sometimes, just for the fun of, hey, let's re-experience things, let's experience things as if for the first time, that's why that infinite being chooses to have an incarnation. Because it intentionally, voluntarily chooses to forget 99.999% of everything it knows, and it knows just this tiny, tiny little slit of consciousness, which is what we are here on Earth as an incarnated being. And then we play the game of gradually waking up again to the all-infinite being that we really, really are. I give you an analogy. If you think of a zoom lens, you know, where it can be telephoto or wide angle, you know, being in a high state of consciousness is like a wide angle lens where you get to see a lot of little stuff all at the same time, whereas being an incarnation is like turning that zoom lens to focus in on just one place. So you zoom in really, really close. So you only see one tiny, tiny little area, but you get to see it in a tremendous amount of detail. So basically, now that we're incarnated, we're gradually going back to where we started, which is an infinite, eternal, all-knowing being, all-knowing, all-loving being.
Well, the it sounds like what you're saying is that what we're doing is a form of entertainment, and the reason for existence itself would be to keep from getting bored?
Well, actually, you're assuming that existence has a reason, but existence preceded any concept of reason, so it doesn't need a reason to exist. You're superimposing something that doesn't need to be superimposed there. You're presuming there's a reason. It doesn't have to be a reason. It just exists. It just is. And that isness preceded any sense of purpose or reason. Now, you can superimpose any reason, but that's arbitrary because you're superimposing it.
Well,
but basically why it does it is just the fun of exploration. God loves exploring, and we're all just tiny little gods exploring, gods and goddesses exploring.
It's been a fascinating trip with you. There's so much to cover. There's no way that...
Let's just give the website one more time. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely. Please do.
Yeah, it's just iasos.com, yasos.com. That's it.
Simple enough to remember, folks. Yasos, it's been a fascinating trip with you. We're running out of time. And... I really would like to have you back, but the next time I'd like to be a little bit better equipped. I'll say this: even had you sent me the CDs,
offered to do.
Yes, I know you did.
Yeah.
Even if I have them, we have some equipment problems. We would not have been able to play them anyway.
Yeah, but even if you play the music, then we wouldn't have had so much great conversation either.
Absolutely.
Either way, it's great.
It has been. And there is so much to cover. Okay, so I'm going to ask you straight out on the air. Would it be possible at some future date to get you back on the air?
Of course, anytime.
We would love it. Thank you so much for coming on our show tonight. It has been absolutely marvelous. There's absolutely no way to cover the amount of information you have, not in 1 hour.
Nevin, I want to thank you for the service you're providing all of your listeners. You're doing a great job, and from my heart, I send you my love and gratitude for the tremendous service you're giving all of them.
Oh, well, thank you so much, and believe me, it's darn little compared to what you've done.
We're all serving in different ways. We're all benefiting others in different ways. I would say one is greater than the other.
Thank you so much, and good night to you.
Okay, good night, Nevin.
Folks, another fascinating journey into some very strange realms of knowledge. I learned a lot about angels tonight. We have had a little bit of equipment problems this evening. We will be back in about 10 minutes. Hold on.
Hello?
Hi. Who's on the line?
This is Yasos.
Oh, Yasos, you need to hang up, guy.
I did hang up, then the phone rang.
Oh, he called. Hold on. We've got... Hold on 1 second. That was my fault.
So I'll hang up again.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Still Yasos.
I don't know why we're getting...
I'm going to interject here just for a second. I have your next guest on the other phone line. I can just put him through at any time. I don't get it. I'm lost.
Yasos, I'm sorry.
By the way, Yasos, wonderful. My gosh, you are... What energy, what spirit, what love. Thank you.
There must have been a reason why you're back on the air.
You can't get rid of me.
Yes. We got you now.
Twice I've hung up and twice you've called me back right away. As soon as I hang up, the phone rings.
I have no idea why, because we're dialing 925 and that is not your number. Yours is 415.
It sounds like some angels are being playful here.
Yes. I've never had this happen before.
Yeah, well, okay, angels are very clever.
We will try it again. Don, what do we need to do at this point?
I just put them on the air. When you say put them on the air.
All right. Give me, just hold him on the air for a few minutes, will you?
You got it.
Okay.
Should I hang up?
Yes. Yeah. So please do.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Am I still on the air, Don? I have no idea.
Oh yeah, you're still on the air, and we got a full audience here. They're probably laughing.
Okay, they're laughing along with me. Hold on one second. Let me try to find my notes here. Don, I have never ever experienced anything like that.
You know, the energies are fabulous. When you start working with these wonderful entities which are around us at all times, they are playful. They're even some of them mischievous, but in a very wonderful way. And it's just, even our audience, I'm sure, is going to start to experience it, because the energies move, they grow, and they expand. And those that choose to allow those energies, like Yanzos was saying, I'm telling you, they will come, because they actually want to introduce themselves more than you even want them to introduce themselves to you.
It was a fascinating trip. I mean, I got tripped out. Every time I did something, I had him back on the phone. I couldn't believe what was going on. All right, here's what we're going to do, folks. Usually I take a break for about 10 minutes, but we're not going to do that tonight. I'll just quit a little bit earlier. Things have gotten a little bit out of whack. We'll just kind of roll along with it. By the way, folks, I want to make a little announcement here. Sometime in early January or late January, the producer, Mr. Don Newsom, is probably going to be moving to California. I guess I could say Don is going to paradise. It's going to be an absolutely marvelous move, folks, because what's going to happen is we are going to have wonderful equipment changes where it's going to work. Nothing will ever fail. And let's hope the angels are on our side. Okay, folks, here's what we're going to do. Before we bring the next guest on, I do want to do a astrology report from Jill Campanella, as everyone knows, my wife, Jill. Hello, Jill. What have you got for us tonight?
Well, if you want to put it up on the screen, I'll tell you.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Okay. Thank you. Well, many of you know, there's been a blockage, and you felt blocked in your efforts. The blockage in the completion of projects that many of you have been experiencing should soon subside. As Mercury regains its normal stride, communication becomes clearer and more effective. Mars is again moving forward, and as it picks up the pace, projects should finally find their way to fruition. There's no way around it, though. The last weeks of 2005 and the first few of 2006 will be stressful. How stressful depends upon your ability to relax and go with the flow, so to speak. Despite this large, in-your-face, fixed grand square that hovers over the Earth at this time, think of it as a growth opportunity. After all, isn't it life's challenges that offer us the impetus to make the necessary changes in our lives? Planetary configurations aside, there are plenty of softer aspects that affect our lives. But to see them, we usually have to step aside from apparent confusion and smell the roses. This Thursday morning, the 15th at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time, Venus, planet of love, beauty, and harmony, enters the sign of Aquarius and co-joins Chiron, the planet that represents healing of old wounds. Then, just 15 minutes later, the moon reaches fullness in Gemini. This is a great opportunity to detach from any heavy-duty emotions you may have been suffering. Celebrate life in the now with family members and or neighbors and friends. Have a party, play charades, or trivial pursuit. So long for now. Joy to the world, peace on earth, and goodwill toward men. And hey, you guys, start with yourself.
Jill, thanks so much for the report. She's right, folks. Start with yourself, goodwill and joy for yourself. Okay, I think we're ready for the next guest. Don, why don't you put Mr. Arbach on the line? Lloyd,
yeah.
Lloyd, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Lloyd, I'm sorry for the confusion. We've been late, and we've just had a heck of a time tonight trying to get things done. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Oh, wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Lloyd, why don't you give the audience a little bit of background on yourself? How you got started into metaphysics, and start off with your website and some of the books that people can order from your website.
Sure, sure. Well, my website's mindreader.com, and actually my books are available through my website, but also through Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, BooksAMillion.com, all those major booksellers. The books that are available these days, my brand new book, which is called A Paranormal Casebook, and that book is about a lot of the cases I've investigated, ghost and poltergeist and haunting cases I've investigated over the last 25 years. I also have a book called Ghost Hunting, How to Investigate the Paranormal, which is exactly that, and a book called Hauntings and Poltergeists, which deals with the connection between psychic experience in general and hauntings, poltergeists, and ghost cases. I have other books that are actually out of print right now. You'll see some other things on my website as well. I have a number of things, including videos and a variety of other things as well. But I'm
We have a little bit of equipment problem going on. You're not coming in quite loud enough.
Okay.
Let me see if Don is. Don, are you there? Yeah, Don.
I'm here.
We need some help with equipment here because I'm barely hearing Lloyd.
Okay. Let's try to pick him up a bit.
Okay.
Can you hear me better now? Hello?
Yeah, Lloyd, go ahead and...
Yeah, can you hear me now? Is it better?
I'm having this strange feeling. I don't know what's going on.
Why did you...
Oh, his Nevin's connection is cutting.
Lloyd, I'm sorry for the... My connection is cutting out, he's saying. That's what the problem is. Okay. Such a massive background, beginning with the stage. How did a stage illusion?
Right. Well, my background includes a number of different things. I got involved and interested in parapsychology as a kid, and was fortunate to have teachers in high school to encourage me, and also in college and grad, and certainly when I got into graduate school, which was a degree program in parapsychology here in California. So I actually have a master's degree in parapsychology. And while in that program, we were given a course in magic, the kind, you know, sleight of hand and stage magic, to help us offset as researchers some of the fraudulent psychic activities that are out there, because we all know that there's a little bit of that as well as the genuine stuff.
Have you yourself run across any of that before?
Oh yeah, I have. Not so much in my cases. What I find in the ghost cases I investigate is sometimes one family member is trying to fake out another. But I have run into a number of fraudulent psychics. There was, in fact, a guy named Ronnie Marcus who came from Israel a number of years ago, and he was trying to do the Uri Geller thing. He was bending metal and doing healings and things like that, but frankly, he didn't have Geller's personality, so even if he was genuine, I don't know that I would have recommended it to anybody. But he was not a very good fake, let's just put it that way. He convinced a lot of other people, but he was not very good, and unfortunately, I talked to him and my colleagues talked to him, my magician colleagues talked to him, we actually had decided not to expose him, you might say, the normal way, if he was going to be doing his thing for entertainment, which is what Geller mainly does. And in his case, he wanted to be a great healer and a great psychic, and he even continued to, even in private, to say that he was genuine, even though we had great evidence on videotape of him bending a spoon physically, forcibly bending a spoon, and
doing
other...
He was an absolute fraud, is what you're saying.
Well, you know, I don't know if anybody's an absolute fraud, but as far as the normal labels go, yeah, he was a fraud.
Well, you refer to yourself as Professor Paranormal, a little tongue-in-cheek, I understand.
Right.
But I guess the question that I want to ask you is, there seems to be two sides to you. There's the person who says, look, I'm going to go on a stage and I'm going to entertain you.
Right.
But at the same time, there is another side of you that seems to imply that there is, in fact, something going on that we might call psychic phenomena.
Well, it's no implication. I firmly believe that there is evidence and of these abilities. People have these genuine abilities. Some of my best audience members are actually genuine psychics who just love the kind of stuff that I do, because I do throw a lot of humor into it. And I, you know, when it comes right down to it, I really decided that I wanted to have fun with this as well as being serious about it. So I, for a while, I was separating the two. I was trying to keep the two sides very separate, which is why I coined Professor Paranormal to begin with. I wasn't necessarily pushing that Professor Paranormal was a parapsychologist. That's something the media actually got hold of and started to do. And it became very clear that it made more sense for me to talk about both consistently. Because, you know, we have those skeptics out there, the debunkers, who are magicians who claim that because they can duplicate something, this stuff doesn't exist, or that they can catch people doing things no matter what they're doing because this stuff doesn't exist. And I don't buy that. It's not the case.
All right, let's jump. Since you brought up the debunkers, let's stop with the man at the top of the line, Randy.
Yes. What about Randy?
Well, that's what I want you to tell me. I mean, this guy is all over the place.
He's got great, you know, Randy is nothing if not a PR machine. There's no question about that. Randy has got, you know, he's taken a leaf from Houdini's book over the years, and he's an amazing guy when it comes to generating his own publicity and putting the word out. He's also gotten people to back him up for his foundation and many of his activities, which is something it's unfortunate that we can't really do in parapsychology. So I certainly bow down to him for that aspect of things. But he is an absolute debunker. He's not a skeptic. He claims that he would look at evidence, but I don't believe he would. That's my belief, of course. And I personally have looked at his challenge a number of times, and I wouldn't recommend anybody try to take his challenge. But at the same time, the money, you know, people have often, even my colleagues have said they didn't believe the $1 million is there. The million is there. The money is there that he puts out. It's not his money. But the challenge is not something that I would recommend, not necessarily because I think it would be unfair, but I think it would be tedious enough that anyone with any ability would probably lose the ability to perform under the conditions that are going to be required of them.
It would be just too stressful.
It's a performance issue. You know, we're talking about human performance here. And I've shown the challenge, the rules to folks who are in the sports area. My father was a producer for NBC Sports. And the athletes that I've shown it to have said that they wouldn't take the challenge because to them they'd have too much to lose if they couldn't, you know, if they couldn't perform under those circumstances.
It would certainly crunch a person's career, that's for sure.
Right.
Does he make money from doing this? I mean, how does he survive?
He gets a salary from the James Randi Educational Foundation, I'm sure.
But where does that money come from that goes into that foundation?
Well, the foundation does a lot of things besides fundraising. They have fundraising aspects like any foundation would. He does lectures. They do a big conference that they have, in fact, coming up, I think, in Las Vegas next month in January. I mean, they do a number of things that other foundations actually do. And Randy, before the foundation existed, made a mess of his money from television, I make some money from television appearances and from consulting on television. He also gets it from lectures. I make money from lectures. I mean, many folks in the field, both sides, make money from lectures. So that's how you make your money from this area. It's funny, though, that he's making it from the same field that he's trying to eradicate, you might say.
Yeah, but that's the nature of the beast, boy.
It is. Really sure. In any field,
Let's get down to your website. First of all, what is your website? How can people get a hold of some of your books?
Well, my website is mindreader.com, and there's actually quite a bit of information there. I've got a few years worth of the articles I've written over the years for Fate Magazine and for other locations, other publications. So there's quite a bit of information people can get for free there. My books, many of them are listed on my website on the products page. But
all right, let's go through them one at a time.
Sure.
And I want to pick your brain here a little bit. Hauntings and Poltergeist, a Ghost Hunter's Guide. Well, first of all, what's a poltergeist? I've heard the word. I'm really not sure what it is.
Well, it's not what you see in the Spielberg movie, Poltergeist. A poltergeist is a term applied, at least today, to a situation in which physical objects or physical events are happening with no apparent explanation. Things might be flying or moving. They might be breaking. Technology might be acting very strangely, but it's all typically surrounding usually one individual in a family or workplace. And it comes from that individual, typically. There's usually a person under stress or tension or emotional distress. And their unconscious mind uses an ability we all have called psychokinesis, mind over matter, to let off steam. Think of it as a psychokinetic temper tantrum.
So it's not a ghost. The poltergeist, then, is coming from a human.
Right. Now, the term poltergeist was coined in 16th century Germany, maybe even before that, covering situations like this where the term means noisy ghost because there would often be noises associated. And, you know, people say that a poltergeist is a ghost, is an entity because of the term, but the fact is that we don't apply the same terms from 16th century anywhere to things today. I mean, they had a different word for electricity back then, too, and I don't think we're going to use that term today. We understand more about this. In cases where there are ghosts or apparitions and things move, because we have some cases like that, it's rarely, so rarely ever destructive, so rarely ever as active as these cases. And even when things do move, it is still psychokinesis. It is still mind over matter, although it is coming from a dead person instead of a living person at that point.
Now, I have heard, and I don't know how true it is, that the poltergeist phenomenon seems to occur when there are young people around puberty. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. That covers, remember, the puberty, it's actually not just puberty, it's actually adolescence, so they can go to their early 20s. And probably the majority of poltergeist cases do surround young teenagers to about their mid-20s. But we do have cases of older adults, certainly. I had a woman who was 67 years old, who was at the center of the poltergeist phenomena. It does surround stress and tension, and certainly during puberty and adolescence, there's a lot more physical and emotional stress and tension just happening without any outside influences.
Have you yourself ever seen or experienced the poltergeist phenomenon, in other words, right in front of you?
Yes, I've been in a few cases where things have actually moved in front of me, in both types of cases, both with the poltergeist phenomena and with the true ghost type cases.
Well, why don't you describe what you actually saw?
Well, you know, the fact is, it's nothing like the movies. In one case, it was actually coming from one member of a couple, and whenever they would argue, things would move around, and they ended up having an argument right in front of me, and a cigarette ashtray on their coffee table in front of me slid off the table, as did something else on there, and the next thing they saw was me crawling around on the floor trying to see how it happened. In other words, I don't always trust people. I do look for other alternative explanations, too, including fraud in these cases. I've also seen, in some poltergeist cases, we've actually seen things displaced. So I'll turn around and something has been moved from one place to another and there's no one else in the room that's within reach of the object, for example.
Lloyd, I want to pick your brain here for a minute. Years ago, I was living on a ranch in Montana, and there were barns and shacks around. I had an extremely heavy toolbox. The darn thing must have weighed 50 to 75 pounds. I had two young children who couldn't possibly pick it up, and a wife that didn't weigh more than 100 pounds. She would have needed a forklift to get it off the ground. But no matter what I did, that darn toolbox always wound up on a shelf underneath the workbench. No matter where I put it, I'd go back the next day and that's where it would be. Is that a form of poltergeist?
It could very well have been your own unconscious mind. You know, there's a minor form of poltergeistry we call JOTT, J-O-T-T, or just one of those things. And it surrounds us putting objects down, such as our keys, and having them gone and then reappear a little bit later on. That's a fairly common thing for folks. Now, sometimes it is because you have are simply not seeing the keys even though they're physically there. We often have kind of reverse or negative hallucinations from mind glitches, you might say. But we do put things down. They do get moved, and it's often around our moods and our behavior. Computers react definitely to stress and to people's mood shifts. I go out and give lectures to college students throughout October every year around the country, and I kind of do my own little straw poll, and it is true that when people are under stress, their computers, their printers, everything else acts up even more than it normally would.
Well, what you're describing makes sense, because I didn't think about it until you just mentioned it, but at the time, there was a great deal of stress going on in my life. Well, considering the energy that it would take to move something like a toolbox,
without a hand
being connected to it.
Right. You're thinking in conventional terms, though. That's the problem. We don't know how this actually works. We don't know whether there's an enormous amount of energy required here or no energy at all. Because we are talking about consciousness interacting with things, and that's the problem with psychokinesis. We're not sure how it works.
So, yeah, and I guess let's go back to the ashtray. The ashtray falls on the floor. Is there a way to channel whatever it is that's doing that? I mean, obviously, a force has taken place.
Mm-hmm.
Can that be channeled?
If you mean, can you have conscious control over it?
Yes.
The answer is yes, to some extent. One of the things we know about psychic ability in general is that belief really affects it dramatically. And that's not unusual in human performance in general. I mean, an athlete can't do much unless they believe that they can or accept that they can. And one of my colleagues, Julian Isaacs, years ago had a poltergeist case from here in Northern California. The woman was a bartender, and he was able to get her to learn to control her abilities for a short time, but after a while, essentially, whether it is either for continually being made fun of or just her disbelief just asserting itself or just simply getting tired of it, it stopped happening. But I've worked with people who have been able to do PK on a fairly regular basis.
Well, when we're talking then about poltergeist, are we then, in fact, talking mainly about telekinesis? Is that what this is coming down to?
Well, when things moved, then you would use the term telekinesis. But psychokinesis is a broader term. You know, if you talk about a computer screwing up, that would not necessarily be telekinesis unless the computer, of course, itself moved. So psychokinesis is action by the mind, and that's the broader term that we use for this phenomenon. But telekinesis is one part of that.
Well, how do you actually go about a ghost hunting? I mean, what do you do?
Well, a good part of it is actually interviewing. And unlike many of the ghost hunter groups that you see often on television who rely on technology, while we do use technology to help bring in additional data and to help see if there are any unusual things in the environment, we are relying on human experience because that's actually what defines things. In other words, a ghost is defined by the person's interaction with that entity, a witnessing of that event. Poltergeist phenomena involves human witnesses. All of it involves human beings. And so we start with the witnesses. We don't run into spooky places just because they're spooky. We have to have someone who has seen something or experienced something recently to warrant an investigation. And so we really work off of the human experience. We do work with sensitives, some of whom are amateurs, some of whom are professional psychics. We work with technology to help bolster that. In other words, if the psychic or a witness is having an experience and we get something unusual on our magnetic field detectors or some other device we're using and we cannot explain that reading, we are able to connect it to the experience and say that this experience this person is having also has a physical perspective or part of it that is happening.
Well, why don't you describe a little bit some of the equipment? Because what we see in the movies looks fairly sophisticated.
If we had Spielberg's budget, we'd actually be able to get that kind of sophisticated equipment too. It's essentially environmental sensing equipment. We're using equipment to sense the environment. And there are many ways that you can pick up things from the environment. For example, there are electrical fields around us. There are magnetic fields around us. We are bombarded with broadcast signals, of course, which is something we don't really play with. We don't need to. But, I mean, if you want to talk about what we're bombarded with consistently in the environment, we have more broadcast signals probably going through us than anything else at this point. We have, when you talk about magnetic fields, you talk about, or electromagnetic fields, you talk about things from technology through to also the Earth's magnetic field, which gives off an effect on human beings that we know about. So we're trying to determine, for example, what a house's baseline is. And then when somebody sees something, is there a shift in that baseline? We use temperature sensors sometimes, although unfortunately it is a stereotype and misconception that people have cold spots when there are ghosts. That does happen in some instances, but very often the cold spot is not physically measurable because it is simply an experience that people are having. They're feeling cold even though it's not physically cold.
Alright, I want to take a little sideline, a little side trip with you here on talking about cold spots. It was an experience that I had with a client, and this person was extremely distraught. I mean, this person, every time they came in, was in emotional upheaval. Now, she kept claiming to me that someone was tossing her around her own room. And I got her to explain, you know, what the experience was like, so on and so forth. At first, I thought that possibly she was being beaten by her husband. I thought this was a classic abuse case in which the wife was trying to cover up. Finally, after frustration on my part, where I couldn't get through to that, I finally said, well, you've talked so much about it. Can you actually produce in this office right now what you experienced in the room, in your bedroom? And she said, like what? And I said, well, you talked about the temperature going down. Can you bring that on? She said, yes. So I said, well, go ahead and do it. Now, Lloyd, I certainly did not expect to see a temperature drop.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm telling you, this was midsummer, and the temperature did drop. It dropped to such a point, I actually invited my secretary into the room to verify it. Now tell me, was she somehow affecting the air in the room?
She could have actually, it could have been a PK effect on her part rather than something outside. In fact, I've had cases where people claim that they were being attacked by something, and it really was, you might say, an internal attack. They were their own unconscious was causing physical effects that were directed at themselves. And certainly the temperature drop could be part of that.
Have you ever seen a temperature drop like that yourself?
Yeah, not in poltergeist cases usually. We've had them happen in a couple of ghost cases, but it's very rare.
Well, I'll tell you, this she was an extremely unusual person, and I had a heck of a time trying to explain in my own notes what actually occurred. But it certainly got me to thinking in a direction of maybe it's possible for people to be doing things without actually putting their hands on it. I mean, she wasn't getting up and, you know, putting on an air conditioner or something. She was just sitting there in a chair and the temperature is dropping. So somehow energy is going from her out of her into the room and changing the environment. And I guess that's what I meant before. Can we control that kind of thing? I guess at some point we may learn that.
Right, right.
Well, you know, you cannot go on the net nowadays without finding someone who's saying they're a ghost hunter.
Yeah, unfortunately. Okay. That is unfortunately true.
I mean, it's all over the place. Ghost hunters are like a dime a dozen now. I want to bring you to a recent event that's taken place here in northern Utah. People seem to be going out with to cemeteries with recorders.
Yeah.
What are they doing?
Well, they're doing something that's been around for quite a long time, and they certainly don't have to go to cemeteries to do it. It's called electronic voice phenomena. And the idea is to ask for spirits or ghosts or whatever to provide a message or an interaction via a recording device. A digital recorder, an audio recorder, something like that. You might say that the device itself then becomes like a medium, like a spirit medium. and then they'll go back and listen to it and hopefully hear something very clear. Unfortunately, you know, too many of them don't know about screening out additional sound. So while there is some good EVP, there is also a lot of bad EVP out there. And they certainly do not need to be doing it at a cemetery.
It doesn't have to occur in a cemetery.
No. The ghosts don't hang out in cemeteries. The only reason that they're getting anything at a cemetery at all is because that's where they're going and asking for help. It's almost like you take your cell phone to a cemetery, you're going to get a call in a cemetery. But you can take your cell phone over to a bowling alley and get the same phone call in the bowling alley.
Well, wait a minute. Are you saying that these entities, whatever they are, exist all over the place? Is that...
Well, let me ask you, why would they be in a cemetery?
I have no idea, Lloyd. It sounds, I mean, you know, to me it's like a story. It makes for good drama.
Yeah, well, it does make good drama, and it's for the amateur ghost hunters, it's kind of a spooky place to go, and hanging out in a cemetery is kind of a goofy, fun thing to do. But, you know, it's not like everyone who dies sticks around it as a ghost. That's not what the evidence shows. But what we find is that people can go, you know, wherever they want, pretty much. You're not stuck in a single spot. And you certainly wouldn't be hanging out in a cemetery.
Well, what they're picking up on these recorders, is that real? Or I've never actually heard one.
Well, some of the EVP is very good. I mean, some of it's done by people who have shielded equipment. They are very careful. The sound that they're getting is clearly a human voice. It is clearly something you can understand as opposed to just simply, you know, mumbling type sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Which is most of what I hear, you know, people will send me EVPs or play them for me and tell me specifically what it says, and all I hear is this really weird mumbling groaning thing. It's like an audio ink blot in that sense. But some of it's very good, and I know some audio engineers who are doing analysis on this as well. And what's interesting is that some of the voices, when you do a voice print analysis, clearly are human. You come up with a human voice print. But interestingly enough, recently they've been getting voices where the voice print doesn't show something human or animal or anything like that. It's almost like it's an artificial voice, as if the recorder itself is being used to generate the voice, which makes sense because the only way a ghost could get a voice on tape would be to affect the device using psychokinesis.
Yeah, since the ghost itself has no throat, no vocal cords, would have to vibrate air somehow.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that if the ghost was making an actual sound, you would hear it. The idea in the EVP here is these folks don't hear the voices. They only hear them on playback, which means that there's an interaction onto the equipment.
Right, the ghost is somehow... Okay, I'm using this word ghost, and it sounds like a very strange...
That's a fine term. That's okay. I mean, it's the common term people use.
Okay, is what they're picking up... Was this a person who was at one time alive and is now dead? Do you believe that?
You know, there is really no way to know with the specific EVP situations. You really don't know. The reality is that it's possible that the operator of the recording device is the person who is affecting the recording device. In other words,
just like in the poltergeist situation.
Right. It's their expectation and desire to get a voice that gets a voice.
Well,
so we really don't know. Now, if you got somebody there who's like a psychic, or you have a couple of people there who are seeing the ghost or experience the ghost, and you get a voice on tape, that's good. Otherwise, it's no better than any other detector we've got.
All right, let's cover that then for a minute. Have you ever been involved in a case in which you yourself believe, Lloyd actually said to himself, wow, I believe this was a human that died and this entity is now standing on this planet?
Oh, yeah. I have cases. In fact, my new book, Paranormal Casebook, one of my favorite cases is written up extensively there at a restaurant called the Moss Beach Distillery just south of San Francisco. And that is one of the places where I'm convinced there's a woman there who's still around after her death many, many decades later.
Why? Why do these entities remain?
Well, you have to kind of look at them, each one individually. At the Moss Beach Distillery, this woman was... at least what she's told people over the decades is that she was originally waiting around for her boyfriend, who was with her when she was killed, and she has been waiting for him to take her away. But more recently, she has just simply said to people that she knows that he's probably never going to come back and get her, so she just likes hanging out because she likes the party. not using exactly those words. At another location, the USS Hornet Aircraft Carrier Museum. It's a World War II carrier that is a museum now in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area. And there are dozens of apparitions that have been seen, dozens of ghosts of sailors. They did not die, we figure, during combat. They actually died after combat, after probably in civilian life. But they were people who served aboard the ship, and they've pretty much gone back to retire to the ship. And in that case, when people ask me, why are they here, I usually ask people to go over and ask the docent, the older gents who are doing the tours, why they are volunteering to do the tours in their late 70s and early 80s. And they talk about this great time of their lives when they were serving aboard the ship during World War II, fighting the good fight. And that's the reason why these ghosts are here, too.
Because they are, in a sense, reliving, it's a bad term, the experience?
Well, I don't know if they're reliving the experience as much as they're hanging out with their comrades. You know, people tend to haunt the places that they had positive feelings for about in their lives. So the ghost of the Moss Beach Distillery is there because she had a very positive time of her life there. People hang out, ghosts will stay with their family or with their friends because they had a positive time of their lives. They have real positive associations with those things, those people or those places.
Is there any reason why anyone should be frightened of these apparitions?
Not from a physical standpoint, perhaps from a psychological standpoint, in the sense that you may have a hard time wrapping your mind around the idea that someone is with you who's not physically in body. People get worried about that sort of thing. We can harm ourselves from a psychological perspective. But from a physical perspective, no, there's nothing for us to be afraid of. And they can't take us over. They can certainly pop out and say boo, you know, and just like your little brother could. But they really can't do anything to physically hurt us.
So what we're seeing in the movies is a bunch of hogwash.
Well, you know, it's interesting that the majority of movies with ghosts are comedies and dramas. They are not horror films. It's very rare. It's actually a small percentage over the decades, if you look at the history of film, of actual films with ghosts being monsters or evil. Now, you do have a lot of monsters and demons and things like that. That's a whole different category. But when we talk about ghosts, we have many, many films that are dramas, that are classic comedies, even more recent comedies. In fact, there have been very recent films that have this sort of thing going on. I mean, very positive images of ghosts. Because they're just people. They act like people. They don't change their personalities once they die.
So then the conclusion is that from your point of view, a ghost is not going to physically harm someone.
No, that's correct. A ghost will not physically harm someone.
You also seem to be fairly convinced that anybody can become a ghost hunter. Is that true?
You know, you can go out and try to look for ghost experiences, but it's really a problem that so many people are even claiming to be certified as ghost hunters, because there are some amateur groups that certify people. You know, you can just put a blessing on somebody and say, oh, you're certified as a ghost hunter. The reality is that most of the folks, I'd say 99% of them, and I'm hoping it's not that high, actually, know nothing about parapsychology. They know nothing about the field that has been studying this stuff for over 100 years. They don't care about it, in fact, which is really kind of scary to me. And they also don't care so much about the client. So when people call in distress, these ghost hunters will run in with their cameras and recorders. They'll verify because they got something weird on their camera or their recorder. They might say, yeah, there's a ghost here, and that's it. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to deal with them. They don't know what the next steps are because they're not dealing with the experience. They're only simply playing at being ghost hunters.
Well, you have a 5-hour video that I'm assuming it's a training video of some sort.
Right.
Could you just, first of all, how could a person get a hold of that video?
Well, the video seminar, which is Ghost Hunting in the New Millennium, was done by myself and a psychic by the name of Annette Martin, who's been featured on Court TV and a number of other programs. Annette is someone who I've been doing investigations with for a few years. And we provided both the scientific and the psychic perspective. So we kind of came at it from both directions. So it is a basic training video. It is available through my website, my product page, mindreader.com. And actually now I'm teaching courses at HCH Institute in Lafayette, California, and we are audio recording them. and offering them as well, and even offering them for a California state approved certificate program. But we're just offering just the audio as well. People just want the audio. And I included in those are basic courses in parapsychology. In fact, the whole program is a certificate program in basic parapsychological studies. So everything from learning to be more psychic to ghost hunting to research in parapsychology, just what we know about these phenomena and experiences. And
if a person, let's suppose a person believes that their house, for whatever reason, has a ghost, who should they actually contact? Is there an organization that's legitimate that you would say, yes, call these people? How would you go? Who do you call?
Well, you know, I would hope that folks would get to me at some point, but, you know, I don't also want to bring everybody in the country down on my head. The reality is there are some good investigators around the country. I have a small network of people. I wish I knew more people who were good. Unfortunately, most of the people who contact me wanting to be part of the network know nothing about the field of parapsychology, and that's a key factor for us. But the Parapsychology Foundation is one organization. They're on the East Coast, and their website is parapsychology.org. And then there's the Rhine Research Center, which is in North Carolina. That's the original real parapsychology lab, but they also can refer people out. And that's Rhine, R-H-I-N-E.org. And then, of course, my group, which you can contact me through my website, which is the Office of Paranormal Investigations.
Okay, so can we say on the air that if a person has a question, they could contact you, and if nothing else, you could at least lead them?
I can do that. There's a lot of resources actually on my website, and just for folks who want to contact me, realize that I get so many emails, I'm actually pretty far behind. I could spend my days answering email, unfortunately, and it becomes very, very difficult sometimes. So I do try to refer people on to other resources, and if they're here in the Bay Area, certainly we can handle it ourselves.
Okay. We're getting towards the end here of the hour. There is a question I want to ask you, and you're probably going to laugh. Have you personally ever seen an apparition?
I have never seen a ghost, but I have felt a ghost. In fact, I had one walk through me. I have smelled smells associated with a ghost, and I have actually even heard my name spoken by someone.
You had one walk through you. What what does that mean?
Well, the experience was a very kind of almost like a tingling sensation moving back and forth through my body. And I had a mental picture. This was definitely not something through my eyes. It was a mental picture of the woman at the Moss Beach Distillery giggling and walking back and forth through me. And after about 2 minutes, because I was timing this, I was alone in the bar area of this restaurant. And around the corner came three of our psychics who all stopped and looked at me and burst out laughing. And they all saw the woman walking back and forth through me.
They saw the person.
They saw her. I'm not psychically visual. You know, when people see a ghost, they're not seeing the ghost with their eyes. They're seeing the ghost with their psychic senses, if you want to call it that. If we were actually physically seeing a ghost, we could take a picture of him or her, and everyone in the room would see the ghost. We're talking about a mental connection. And for some people, that means visualizing the ghost. For others, it means hearing a voice or feeling something. But it's not... Not a physical. Go ahead.
You mentioned smells.
Yeah.
Odors of some sort.
Yeah, actually, odors are pretty common. They're more common than people actually realize. People will smell a cologne, perfume, or some other scent that's associated with the person who is the ghost. Pretty common.
Well, there have been times in my own life, as a matter of fact, around our own living quarters, where every once in a while, an odor would occur that there's no rational reason for it to be there. I guess I can't just conclude, okay, that's a ghost of some sort, but those things occur to everyone. How do you separate out whether it's just a coincidence of a spilled cologne bottle of some sort, or is this something taking place in your environment in which you need to start investigating?
Well, I think you need to kind of consider the context of what the smell is, you know, whether it really is associated with someone. Are you living in the same place where that smell, where that person lived? I had someone, a friend of mine many years ago, talk about smelling the perfume of his late wife. She had died 20 years before on occasion in his apartment. And in fact, it happened one time when I and another friend were there, and the smell actually moved around the room. It wasn't stationary.
But he had smelled it. You could smell it yourself.
Yeah, we all smelled it. And what was interesting was that he had not lived in, I mean, he'd lived in this one apartment for a couple of years, but his wife died 20 years before, and he had moved 5 times since that time. He did not have any of her clothing or anything else that would have kept her scent, did not have the perfume. So there was nothing in the environment that could have accounted for it. Now, had he lived in the same house, it's possible that there was a part of that, maybe the scent got stuck in the wall someplace, like smoke does, and depending on the conditions, you can actually pick it up. But you have to kind of explore those different alternative explanations.
Well, Lloyd, it's been a fascinating trip with you. I could probably spend hours trying to figure out, because there are so many things that have happened to me at a personal level, and everyone who's listening, I've had all have these experiences. Everyone wants to sit down with Lloyd and say, hey, this has happened to me. Can you explain this?
Yeah, I know.
And for you, you must get on overload with that after a while.
Sometimes, well, yeah. You know, and I prefer to talk about other things. That's why I do the entertainment, to kind of blow off steam.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure you need some release like the rest of us. Lloyd, it's been an absolutely fascinating trip with you. I have really enjoyed our time together. And, you know, I apologize for our equipment problem tonight. We ran behind, we were off schedule, but we finally did manage to catch up a little bit. Lloyd, one more time before we close off, would you give the audience your website address?
My website is www.mindreader.com, and it will lead you to not only my product, but also the courses on parapsychology at HPH Institute. A lot of articles you can download, and of course my books are all available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and BooksAMillion.com.
Well, Lloyd, again, I thank you so much, folks. It's been a fascinating evening. Good night to you, Lloyd, and everyone out there. If you've got an idea that something is coming around you, go to Lloyd's website, send him an email. Please don't just bomb him with emails. He's got plenty to deal with. But if you've got a real concern, I'm sure he will set you in the right direction. That ends our show for tonight. Again, it was a fascinating journey into the realms of forbidden knowledge. Until next time, this is Nevin Campanella wishing all of you health, happiness, and a safe journey on your chosen path. Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.